Greetings and salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are Canada's video game podcast here between your ears on the air over your speakers, through your car, on the iPod or other MP3 device, or perhaps even on smartphone, if you're so technologically inclined. How are you doing, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages? Thanks so much for joining us again. I am Mike the Legend here with you, recording on Wednesday, November the 14th of the year 2012. We are in the back half, the home stretch, as it were, of this calendar year, but such is the way time goes. It marches forward, onward and upward, and always twirling, twirling, twirling towards freedom. Aren't I right?
Yes, you are right, and I am the second voice on this radio program, as I always am, though this week my name is different. Slightly different than it was last week.
Are you trying to imply changes?
Yes, it's a rotating nickname, as I have done for the past, well, over 6.5 years.
Such a preposterous idea, yes. I say. Poppycock. Yeah. Poppycock.
It is preposterous, but we've stuck with it for 6.5 years, and we're not stopping now. So this week, my name is Dennis, the man who is over the moon with the Schwarzenegger movies on the horizon.
Indeed, no doubt referencing the news of late that Schwarzenegger, not only getting back into acting, but getting into good genre acting of some properties and movies that we want to see him in.
Yes, I mean, he's been out of the spotlight for quite some time, but it seems now that he's done with his political thing and that his marriage is over and no doubt his wife cleaned him out for a lot of money, he probably needs to make some of that back now. And
if the divorce isn't final, then she's going to clean him out, and it's going to be a costly affair, so he's got to get back, you know, to work, earning the money to pay the spousal support, child support, the 8 mansions she won in the settlement, something of that effect.
Yeah, something ridiculous. But all that means for us as fans of his 90s movies, largely 90s movies, not really, well, 80s and 90s, I guess. Not really much past 94, 95. But nevertheless, his classic era.
Indeed.
And also, indeed, of, you know, as fans of other classic era, well, action hero tough guys, it seems to be a golden age for, you know, they're making like old badass revivals, as it were, you know, the Expendables being kind of like a, not a launching off point, but kind of like almost like a
throwback.
A throwback, and almost like the punctuation, some form of punctuation or open quotation mark to this era, really, where, you know, we've seen a lot of the old guard kind of coming around and going back and doing what they did best. But yeah, Schwarzenegger's no different, you know, after making his appearance in The Expendables. It seems like he's got a lot of awesome things coming up.
Sure does. And most recently, we certainly have to touch on the news that he has signed on and agreed to be in and reprise the role of Conan the Barbarian.
Yes. Hopefully going to be making the movie that, well, every 14-year-old boy who ever watched Conan the Barbarian, the original, wanted to see after they saw the ending credits where he's old Conan, like, sitting on that throne lonely and with a beard and stuff, you know? So, theoretically, this could very well be that movie where he's old Conan, like, talking about whatever that happened.
And the life he's led, the battles he's waged, and the wars he's fought in, the lives he's slain and taken, and the women he's bedded, no
yes.
doubt.
And clearly, you know, on the ride for one final conquest
yes,
of some sort.
Exactly, and I think even Stallone has said as much that he wants...
Schwarzenegger, that is.
Excuse me?
Not Stallone.
Sorry. Had Expendables on the brain. Schwarzenegger has said that this is the movie, you know, he wants to see and wants to make is with Conan just one last battle left in him before he goes out in a blaze of glory, no doubt.
In true Conan the Barbarian style.
Indeed. Unfortunately that James Earl Jones won't get to reprise his role as the villain.
Well, that'd be just kind of bizarre if he did.
I'm sure there's some way they can involve mysticism to bring him back to life.
Probably.
And restore his head to his shoulders.
Yes. But that's not the only Schwarzenegger movie that seems to be awesome on the horizon. I mean, there's, well, we've all seen trailers for that new movie that he's the sheriff in.
Yes, The Last Stand, I believe it is, where he plays the sheriff of some small town that's the small border town that a crime gang is trying to run through as they make it to the border to try and cross over back into Mexico and get away with whatever crime, and he has to make one last stand to stop them.
Of course, you know, in keeping with the title, The Stand.
Indeed.
Then there's the other ones, like the one that he's got coming out with Stallone, called The Tomb.
Yes, that one I don't think has been given as much attention or press as, say, the Conan news was.
Yes, but it should have been just as important, because everyone, back when they were in their heydays, everyone always wanted to see Stallone and Schwarzenegger together in a movie in some way, shape, or form. And it's finally happening.
Yes, perhaps you'd like to inform the listeners who might not be aware of this this gigantic team-up of action might that is going to be happening and coming to cinemas.
Yes, it's called The Tomb, and it involves, well, Stallone, who plays the character of some designer of high-tech buildings who designs prisons, etc., who I guess got wrongfully accused and convicted of some crime and is thrown into one of the prisons that he designed that is quote-unquote unescapable, and his cellmate is Arnold Schwarzenegger playing some character, and basically, they have to escape. It's Tango and Cash in 2012. That's all I care about.
But it's not just Schwarzenegger and Stallone in the movie. They are the ones receiving top billing,
yes,
and rightfully so, but the supporting cast seems just as ridiculous.
Yes, I mean, among the list of names, there was, well, Vinnie Jones.
Impressive, Vinnie Jones, he playing Juggernaut in the X-Men The Last Stand, and having a storied career, being, well, just a large hitman, strongman type character actor, also playing roles in the Guy Ritchie heist movies in Lock, Stock, or is it Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking, or Snatch?
I always
confuse the two, excuse me, but it's one of those.
Yeah, I never remember myself. They're a little bit kind of interchangeable. They're sort of one movie to me, but I want to say it was Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. But yes, also in there, well, Jim Caviezel, you know, the guy that played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ, he's in there, as well as...
And he plays the corrupt warden, if I recall.
Yeah, he's the corrupt warden, the main antagonist, the quote-unquote bad guy.
And Vinnie Jones is his henchman.
Yeah, but then, interestingly enough, in jail with them is, you know, the guy caught for computer crimes, played by 50 Cent. Now, that's not really the most... I'm not really looking forward to him as an actor, but... The fact that he's just kind of in there like that is funny to me.
Yes, that concept is quite ridiculous.
Yeah, as a computer hacker, 50 Cent, you know, the gangster rapper, got shot 9 times.
Finally,
kind of
the role he was born to play.
But, and then, you know, Sam Neill, for whatever reason, is just in the movie.
No one's quite sure why yet, but he's in there. I'm sure he will be a character from... either Stallone's or Schwarzenegger's past, who will offer them great sagely wisdom at the most timely and opportune of moments.
Yes, and then, you know, other people peppered in there, like Vincent D'Onofrio and Amy Ryan. Vincent D'Onofrio, of course, you know, more recently from Law and Order, I believe it was Criminal Intent, but you might remember him as the mentally challenged guy from Full Metal Jacket, who got beaten with soap and then beaten with the soap in the socks.
Oh!
Him? You know? Yeah. So that one looks kind of interesting. And then another one that was kind of interesting as well, Triplets. Which, yeah, I don't know how firm up it is, but I know in Schwarzenegger's book, which I've been reading, he does talk about it. So there is at least... He's saying it's going to happen, and it's going to be starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Eddie Murphy, and Danny DeVito. And, yeah, it's a sequel to Twins. Eddie Murphy's the other brother. It's ridiculous.
Now, you can understand if I have any sort of skepticism or pessimism about this, simply because on the surface, this seems like it could easily devolve into schlock.
Yeah, and it probably will, but even still.
I mean, given Eddie Murphy's recent track record of cinematic releases, yeah.
But he is around Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
This is also true.
So, there's that.
There is that. It better be an R-rated comedy.
I hope so. I mean, Schwarzenegger seems to do better in R-rated movies.
Although Kindergarten Cop was... did have a certain, you know...
Je ne sais quoi?
That's right.
Yes. So that one is fine, I guess. You know, it's okay to... yeah. But even still, I would prefer if, you know, they get a little bit raunchier and Eddie Murphy kind of finally comes back as, you know, the great comedic actor that he once was.
True, as he was in the heyday of... in the 80s, mid to late 80s, and in first part of the 90s.
Yep.
Early part of the 90s, or a similar heyday period to Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
How coincidental. So certainly we'll be on the lookout for that, but I'm looking forward to it. Good to see that he's finally getting back to the genres he knows he loves, and the films that people certainly do love. And it's if there's any hope in the universe, if there's any sort of positive guiding spirit has a hand in all of us, there will be another Terminator that is done by James Cameron.
Yes.
Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I hope so one day, though I'm not holding my breath too much for that one.
No, that one I've heard very negative things about the possibility of a fifth Terminator, internet scuttlebutt being that might be set in some alternate timeline.
And not written or directed or produced or anything by James Cameron?
Yeah, that... not encouraging for me.
No. Though True Lies 2 would actually be very interesting if they managed to finagle that one.
Well, I could see that happening more readily than Terminator. I mean, Tom Arnold has nothing to do.
And Jamie Lee Curtis?
I'm sure she'd do it.
She'd probably do it.
Well, in between, you know, she could arrange it in between her yogurt commercials.
Yes.
So she might be available there, and I believe it's doable. And plus, True Lies ended on such a cliffhanger ending.
Well, it was open-ended enough that it wouldn't seem far-fetched to have another movie. There was nothing crazily final about it.
True.
But yes, that is our opening banter for this program that seemed to have gone on a little bit longer than normal, but that's all right. We don't really have a time limit. We just kind of restrict ourselves to around an hour.
Indeed, but it was worth talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're a fan of his classic pieces of work, and we're sure that a lot of you out there are as well. So it's good to know these things so we have hope for the future and something to look forward to, and something to go out and purchase, procure, in one way, shape, or form. Perhaps one form you'll acquire these movies in the future is through downloading, but how you'll store them could be entirely different from how you're storing things now with your computer data storage. Also ties in nicely with something we were ragging on last week, that being cassette storage.
Yes. Now, in computers, there's, you know, two types of storage, really, that you can think of. Long-term storage... storage of big or, you know, just important things that, you know, you don't need to access all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the short-term storage where you want it to be fast and you want to be able to get it right now and you don't want to have to wait for boot-up times. You don't want to have to wait for any of this stuff. But it's not important. You know, like maybe it's just like a TV show that you downloaded that you just want to watch through now. Whereas, like, the long-term storage might be, like, you know, your parents' anniversary for 5 years ago video or something that, you know, you don't need to watch all the time, but you want to know that it's there. Just, you know, so 20 years down the road, you can grab it and say, hey, I remember this, and it's still just as mine. But, you know, sometimes these things get very large, and, you know, storage is volatile.
And it can be.
It can be, like, it's... backing up stuff is a huge pain in the ass. Just a... if you've ever had to, like, back anything up, or, you know, I'm sure everyone's had that one experience where they've lost a hard drive before.
It's not a pretty sight.
No. But, unfortunately, hard drives just kind of fail. And, you know, they're kind of limited in what they can store anyways. Like, there's kind of an upper limit on how big a hard drive can really be without, you know, getting into the ridiculous realm of, oh, I have, you know, a big crazy RAID array or a network access device that cost me $25,000 that I put in the corner of my living room. No one usually does that.
No, that'd be a little unnecessary, and though it would make a great conversation piece for having company over.
And as to why your living room is so loud all the time. But there's a revitalization of an old technology that last week we were ragging on. I'm speaking of cassette tapes.
Yes.
Now, you might not have remembered that tape-based storage was a thing earlier on. I guess, you know, late 90s, early 2000s.
We most remember it from being for VHS tapes, audio cassette recordings, 8-tracks, as we ragged on last week as well. But it was a tangible form of storage, of data storage, for a long time.
It was.
In the early heyday of computers, actually.
Yes, for actually quite a while, like extending far earlier than, you know, the 90s, even like, I think even in the 70s, they were using tape-based storage. Mm-hmm. But, yes, right up until, like, about the 90s, 2000s, you know, there were, like, implementations like the, I think it was the Jazz Drive, how they had, like, their little 1 gigabyte tapes. This is before, you know, this is back when floppy disks were pretty much your go-to format. And then, you know, after CDs and DVDs and then huge hard drives came out, people kind of forgot about tape-based storage. But now, well, files are getting bigger, and there's more and more just data out there that people don't want to lose.
And the need now is for not only, I guess, larger hard drives, but also what researchers are looking into is creating denser hard drives. And they've been able to accomplish a pretty ridiculous storage capacity using old-style tape drives. Old-style, I guess, what we know, cassette tape drives, but just ultimately tape drives, and creating ultra-dense tape drives. This information coming by way of newscientist.com. And they reported that these new tapes have been developed by Fujifilm in Japan and IBM in Zurich, and the first prototype of this new ultra-dense tape drive, picture this, it measures 4 inches square and is less than an inch thick. Now, that's not really that big. Now, really, how much crap can you put on something that's 4 inches square and roughly an inch thick? Maybe just a shade under an inch thick. Well, according to the team of researchers who've developed this new storage medium, it's capable of holding 35 terabytes of data.
Yes, 35 terabytes of data.
35 terabytes of data.
And extending that ridiculousness, the researchers at Fuji and IBM are planning to, shrink the internals even further in order to squeeze 100 terabytes into the same space. So 100 terabytes in a cartridge the size, well, roughly of a regular hard drive. That's a lot better than, you know, regular hard drives currently. Now, granted, it's not going to be like the fastest access speed, but it's important that it's, you know, that much storage in that little space. Because, well, if you think about things like Facebook, that has to be stored somewhere.
This is true.
And would you... I think there'd be mass uprising if Facebook all of a sudden went down. And, oh, we lost everything. What do you mean you lost everything? Oh, there's a fire in all of our facilities.
Whoops.
Oh, whoops. Well, we couldn't back up that much data because, well, it's just too much data. Well, now they can back up that much data. And it's... seems like it would be reasonable to do so.
This almost strikes me as something we would see in sci-fi movies and just any sort of entertainment piece that is set in a future universe, future landscape, where the storage mediums are, they look like mini discs that you would use in mini disc recorders, but they have absurd capacities. And I'm being well, taken back there mentally with this information. That's just the image I'm seeing in my head. But if you're wondering just what is the motivation behind this, it's not really to back up Facebook quite yet. Not yet going to be used by, say, Netflix as a means of storing their HD streaming movies or anything to that effect. Instead, the real motivation behind this was rather to come up with a storage solution that was designed to work with the upcoming Square Kilometer Array Telescope. And once up and running in 2024, estimates suggest that this new telescope, or array telescope, will produce 1 million gigabits of data a day.
Gigabytes, that is.
Yes, gigabytes of data per day. 1 million gigabytes of data. Which is a fair bit. Just a lot.
Yeah, well, when you think that 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte, and then 1,000 terabytes is, well, 1 million gigabytes, they're 1/10 of the way there, so with their 100 terabytes when they get that going, but yes, step one, help real science out, which is what this is, since, you know, that's kind of important. Like, you build a square kilometer telescope to be able to capture huge, crazy, high-quality pictures of the farthest depths of space, and you don't want to lose that information, yes. But the other practical applications are still there for the business sector and what have you.
And to commercialize it for, I guess, just normal pedestrian residential use, if you so will. This is one of the great things about scientific innovation. There's generally a, you know, commercial, inability to commercialize the research and have practical, practical applications and uses for normal daily life.
Yes, which is why, well, if we can get on our soapbox for a second here, things like the space program are important. When you just say, oh yeah, well, what has the space program ever done for you? Or it's like, well, the space program didn't directly do stuff for you, but it's the offshoot of the space program that, well, or the technology that goes into things like making shuttles and stuff that ends up kind of being used, creating useful things in the civilian sector.
This is true.
You know, like things like cordless power tools, you know, the batteries on them. Battery technology in general, things like LEDs, even like lasers used in surgeries and various other things as well. Like, I mean, yeah.
And I fully understand, I guess, the overly simplistic view of it. Well, you know, NASA's so far away and, you know, in from wherever you are in Canada and in America or what have you. And that's, well, they send rockets in space and they go look at planets and whatever else. Well, that's nice, but, you know, I'm here. I have my own daily struggles, and I have, you know, kids to get to school and you know, a job to go to and a dog to feed and a car to fix and this, that, and the other thing. Okay, yeah. Fully understand that, but science is important.
Yeah.
Brass tacks it. Science is important. You're enjoying, I guess, some of the fruits of the NASA-based labor, be it from the space program specifically or other programs that NASA has had and run through the years that have had offshoots that have benefited the civilian population. So to anyone out there who might, I guess, rag on NASA or just the need for science and space exploration or think it's unnecessary or what have you, yeah, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. You're not going to have a sympathetic ear here.
Because one of the other benefits of scientific research is that it allows us to, I guess, do crazy things and also just reach new points in I guess, medical science that we, I guess, never thought would come. Or if we did, it was just going to be off in some far-off, distant future.
Yes, it allows us to make breakthroughs that, in this case, are awesome, but also make you think for a second and feel incredibly depressed.
Yes, true. But let's stick to the awesome part, if we can, for a moment.
Yes.
A story you might have heard, certainly made the rounds everywhere on the internet during this week was the story of Canadian patient Scott Routley, a man who was involved in a car accident 12 years ago and ever since has been left in an apparent vegetative state. And we speak of Scott Routley for a reason. Even though he's in this apparent vegetative state, he apparently has been able to engage in some form, some level of communication with doctors.
Yes. Now, this isn't through any sort of, like, twitching of his finger or, like, blinking of his eye or anything, like, or he's just whispering under his breath all of a sudden. No, it's not like a medical miracle. What they did is they hooked him up to an fMRI, and through, well, analysis that they did, I guess they ran enough analysis of, like, other people when they're, you know, thinking of, you know, answers to yes-no question, like when you're thinking of yes or no. I guess your brain, through the fMRI machine, has some sort of signature that they found, like, you know, commonalities between enough people. And
indeed, able to detect the and register the flow of blood in the brain and oxygen levels and read it that way as the doctors were putting questions to him.
Yes, and as it turned out, he was the flow of blood was changing in the same way with him, and, you know, they were able to analyze the flow, like, the data that they were given to pinpoint it to what other people were registered with, you know, yes and no answers. So he, through this analysis of data, they were actually able to glean whether he was saying yes or no to these questions, and the fact that he was actually thinking yes and no.
A quote here, and the best part of this was that this procedure, this analysis, this breakthrough came in Canada. This is a Canadian, based medical breakthrough with people in vegetative states. It happened at the University of Western Ontario, specifically their Brain and Mind Institute of the University of Western Ontario, and Professor Adrian Owen, who is from that institute at the UWO, explained to the BBC about the story and this breakthrough. He said, quote, "Scott has been able to show he has a conscious thinking mind. We have scanned him several times, and his pattern of brain activity shows he is clearly choosing to answer our questions. We believe he knows who and where he is," end quote.
Yeah, the other interesting thing, well, regarding this whole story... before the depressing thing first, the one thing that the BBC article didn't quite touch on, that the CBC article touched on, the big important question that they asked him was, are you in pain? To which he answered, no. Which, you know, okay, cool, he's not in pain. But, well, the story does get more depressing because there was another Canadian patient named Stephen Graham who was also vegetative, and, well, they did, you know, similar analysis of fMRI on him, and they were actually able to prove that he's able to form new thoughts and absorb new information despite the fact that he's in a vegetative state. That is to say, they asked him a question about his niece, who was born after his injury 5 years ago. And I guess his answers coincided with reality. And then, once you get that information into your brain, all of a sudden everything gets really quite depressing. They're alive, and they're...
Aware
of everything that's going on, and they're still mentally all there, but they're truly prisoners of their body. So medical science has just kind of further made us all feel bad about these people even worse, without a cure for them.
That is the most horrible, I guess, part of this breakthrough and discovery, is that, okay, we can analyze their brains, we can glean some information from these readings. Okay, good, we weren't able to do this before, and we can, have some level of communication and interaction with them that we weren't able to previously. Great, that's awesome. Oh, wait. Okay. Now we know that they're, I guess, aware that they have a level of consciousness going on inside their bodies, which are completely uncommunicative to the outside world. Unable to respond to the outside world.
What do we do?
Okay, well, it's a good thing we know, and now we can start working on it, but can we work faster? Now we know that there's something going on inside there when our previous tests could not indicate as such. We just simply thought they were trapped. There was
vegetables.
Exactly. The body wouldn't work, and the presumption was, based on the available testing and the information gleaned from those tests, nobody's home.
Yeah, nobody's home.
To put it in a somewhat crass and overly simplistic manner, and to anyone who knows someone in these vegetative states, I apologize, I mean not to be crass, but that is the simplistic way of putting it.
Yes.
But Canadian science, ahead of the game on this one, I suppose.
Yes, ahead of the game and really, really good at tugging at your heartstrings. Oh, Canada.
Woo! So there's that's going on. I don't really know how to transition from one thing to the next, but...
Yes, well...
Good for
medical science, and thus concludes the ludicrous lead-offs. Now we can peacefully move into the rest of the news, and hopefully try to,
be so horribly depressing.
Yes, I'm going to bring this nosedive up a bit and regain control of the airplane that, don't know what happened there for a second, but we're back.
We are back. We will try and regain our course, set our altitude, or cruising altitude, yes, of 36,000 feet.
Yes.
Sorry, went into pilot mode for a minute there.
Autopilot, even.
If you so will. But as we said last week, and as is so abundantly clear, if you are a fan of video games and have, popped by the game store recently, whichever one you go to, you frequent, you might have heard that it's the big season for video game releases.
Yes, you know what, with Halo 4 and Black Ops 2 and...
And even Assassin's Creed 3 coming out at the end of October. But Halo 4 last week, Call of Duty, Black Ops 2 coming out this week, widely expected to be the biggest video game title of the year. I think even you have leveled that prognostication.
Yes, last week I decided to call it and say that Black Ops 2 will be the greatest selling video game of the year.
Indeed, I think even I've read that some British bet-taking places, some bookies in Britain have been laying odds on the likelihood of Black Ops 2 being the best-selling game of the year. I think they were giving, pretty understandable odds that it was a heavy favorite to be the top-selling game of the year. As the game has just come out, we don't really have any firm sales figures yet of just how many gangbusters Black Ops 2 was, as we're recording here on Wednesday night. We will have that information for you next week, and just, make you aware of just how many hundreds of millions of dollars this title has made in the first couple days. So you can go forward with this information and feel as though you are part of a greater collective if you, in fact, bought the game when it came out, or if you find yourself at a cocktail party and need some sort of factoid to present to the people of the party, the other patrons, then we will have that for you next week, most assuredly.
Indeed.
But there's another big release that is coming out this week that we haven't really touched base on over the past, or touched base on a lot in the past few weeks.
Yes, we've sort of been remiss in talking about it, in part due to our little couple-week hiatus there that we were filling with music. Beautiful, beautiful music.
Sweet music, the dulcet tones of Weird Al and the Halloween show, etc., etc. But this big release I speak of is not of the software variety specifically. In fact, it is more of the hardware version persuasion, which allows you to play brand new software. If you are around on Sunday, you will be able to get yourself a brand new Wii U.
Yes, the new version 2, I guess, as it were, of the Nintendo Wii.
Wii HD, but it's not just a Wii in HD, it's so much more. It's got the tablet.
Yes, it's got that tablet thing.
It's called the gamepad, but simpler if we call it the tablet.
Yeah, either way, our opinion on this program of the Wii U is sort of known already, and but to recap,
It's a general. I do not have a pre-order set for it. I know you don't as well.
No, I don't.
In no small part because I don't really get anything day one release anymore.
No, I don't really do that either. But you know, it's one of those wait and see kind of things for myself. I mean, the lineup of games isn't really exciting. And all the ones that I would want to play, I could already play on my PlayStation or could already play on an Xbox or what have you. And yeah,
I'm not, you know, disinterested, but I'm not absolutely gung-ho.
Yeah, I guess
I'm in between there.
Yeah. But, you know, there are the neat features that it does seem to have that we're not going to, you know, rehash all over
certainly
again. Because we've gone into that already with the E3 show and et cetera, et cetera.
Many shows in between.
Yep, but the one big question mark that was still kind of up in the air for the Wii U was voice chat capability. People were wondering about it. Was it going to have voice chat? If so, did you have to buy any extra peripherals? Was there just a microphone and stuff built into the tablet thing? How did that work?
Indeed. And, well, it was last month, but we're just getting to it now, when Nintendo actually came around and described how their voice chat system would work. And it's not a universal system-based feature. It's more done on a game-by-game, developer-by-developer basis.
Yeah, so short answer, yes, with a but. Long answer, yes, with a but. There is no short answer. It's yes. However, it's weird.
You would think that since the gamepad tablet controller has a microphone built in, you'd be able just to speak into that, as the gamepad tablet controller is what you're supposed to have in your hands pretty much at all points in time. That is kind of the thrust of the system, you know, the thing with the screen that you touch and hold up to your TV, or you can play games on it on its own, which, by the way, that game-to-tablet screen-playing function is also a game-by-game, developer-by-developer basis as well.
Yes.
It's not just right in there. Every game is going to be able to do this.
But
another kick in the balls.
Yes, but the thing about the voice chat is that, no, it doesn't actually use the microphone built into the pad. It's very confusing. You actually, like, it's a strange move. The gamepad's built-in mic is not the default source for voice chat.
No,
Nintendo actually revealed that gamers will likely have to turn to third-party options to find headsets with built-in mics and then plug those accessories into the pad itself. The official statement from Nintendo claims this, and I quote, "Wii U will have in-game chat functionality for select games, including, but not limited to, Call of Duty, Black Ops 2, Assassin's Creed 3, and Mass Effect 3. The feature will be supported by licensed stereo headsets that plug directly into the headphone port of the gamepad. Licensed headsets are available from Turtle Beach and Triton." And, yeah, end quote.
So, and the kicker is, if, say, you're playing a game like Black Ops 2, like Assassin's Creed 3, or maybe even Mass Effect 3, but you really aren't keen on using the gamepad tablet controller, instead you go for their Pro controller, the one that looks like the close sibling of the Xbox 360 controller, you know, that one?
Has, yeah, the
dual
one that
analog
looks,
sticks.
Yeah, it looks more like a real gaming controller.
Exactly, that one, which rumor and internet scuttlebutt, if you believe, says that a lot of the big game manufacturers kind of forced Nintendo to have, so they weren't solely resigned to developing for the tablet. Anyway, neither here nor there, but if you're playing with that one, the Pro controller, then you have to still use the tablet.
Yeah.
For your voice chat system.
Yeah, it gets really cumbersome and confusing, because, well, Yeah, the gamepad has a plug to support your external headset thing, but the Pro Controller doesn't.
No.
It's just totally not there. Nintendo says you can still do it. Like, you can still use voice chat while using the Pro Controller, but you seemingly have to have the tablet lying beside you with this thing just cumbersomely plugged into it.
You sure do.
I mean, that sucks.
That's not really the most comfortable setup, I would think. I certainly would imagine that other people would have better ideas of how to set up and arrange that. But strange, too, is that Nintendo is, if they're, I guess, leaving this voice chat functionality to a separate headset, why then are they not making the separate headset?
Yeah. Seems like a weird lost opportunity there for Nintendo to make a little bit more money?
Yeah, from a business perspective, you got to think they're leaving money on the table, leaving some dollars just right there, and just leaving them and are content to have other companies like Turtle Beach and Triton?
I don't know how it's pronounced. It's T-R-I-T-T-O-N.
I see it as Triton, but those other third-party companies swoop in and scoop up those dollars, should they be there to be scooped up. This is just bizarre and confusing, and I think it all just kind of feeds into what we believe of the Wii U already. Some things look good, some things look neat about it, and then other things just make you go, not so much. There's a lot of yin and yang with this system.
Yeah.
It's not straight ahead, gonna knock your socks off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, there's cool things, but again, it's cool things with an asterisk, and that asterisk is like, you follow it down to the bottom of the page, and then it just says, maybe not the coolest thing.
No.
It's like, what?
Certainly not. Now, you should be aware that also, if you are getting one this weekend, this Sunday, that again, Nintendo has said that it has support for external storage options, because in the two varieties, the two packages that you can buy, two bundles, you're either getting 8 gigs of storage or 32, and for some people, that simply won't be enough. I know some of the downloadable games they have available are kind well, girthy in terms of their size, in the 3 gigabyte range. So on the Wii U, there's 4 USB ports, though be aware, in various other readings recently, leading up to the release of the Wii U, Nintendo has said that there's only the opportunity, where you can only plug in, one USB device at a time. One USB storage device at a time. Now, they'll support external, I guess, hard drives up to, say, 2 terabytes, but that's not really an external hard drive that you can shuttle between your Wii U, your PC, your Mac. It can't be the all, you know, general use external hard drive. It's got to be just formatted for the Wii U.
Yeah, with their own file system. I don't know. I guess that's their way of cutting down on piracy or something, even though it probably isn't that great of a way to cut down on piracy, since, you know, that's, people are gonna find a way to get around that, so
they certainly will. But so you are aware of that. There's also the SD card slot, and will support SDHC cards, high capacity SD cards, if you wish to be more verbose about it. But that is the long and short of it. And yeah, Wii U coming out this Sunday. Let us know, you out there, the listeners, your take. Are you one of those people who's going to be there day one Sunday, bright and early, when the stores open, to collect your Wii U when it goes on sale? Do you have a pre-order? Are you staying out overnight for this system as you did the Wii? Do let us know. Email us, info@thearcadeshow.com, or drop us a line straight up on our website, thearcadeshow.com, is how you can do it. I can say one person who will not be staying out overnight to do so is my sister. The one time she ever did, I never thought she was that big into video games. Then comes the Wii, and she stays out overnight in line at the electronics store to get a Wii right when it goes on sale in the morning. Even she, as she said after, never again.
Yeah. not the smartest decision to make.
Though I do have to say, I could easily go and get a Wii U on Sunday morning and not have to worry about being late for a big thing that I'm working, as the Grey Cup is not in town in Winnipeg this year. As yes, I did get my Wii and was late for working the Grey Cup in Winnipeg many years ago. I was a different person back then. I was younger, more naive of the world.
Yes, but more, less aware of career implications of something like that.
certainly so. I take those lessons with me, so on and so forth.
Indeed.
But another big game release that could quite possibly eclipse the sales records of Black Ops 2 and perhaps even the money generated by the Wii U.
It's possible.
Could be the next release in the Grand Theft Auto series. That one coming from Rockstar North, and it is Grand Theft Auto 5. A few tidbits of information leaking out about, or coming out about Grand Theft Auto 5 in the past few weeks. Namely, we know now that the game is slated for a spring 2013 release. We know the game is going to have three protagonists that apparently you'll be able to change between their storylines at a the drop of a hat, really, the press of a button, I'm assuming. And just a lot of different modes of transportation available in the game, as, well, it was this past Tuesday that a brand new trailer for Grand Theft Auto V was released, premiered on the web, and it, well, makes the game look like some sort of action, well, summer action movie.
It's a summer action blockbuster.
Yes, with lots of explosions, and one thing I picked up from watching the trailer, a lot of different modes of transportation.
Yes, lots of modes of transportation, and, well, playing on a couple of like the movie stereotypes of different types of the characters that you might encounter in the Grand Theft Auto universe, but don't want to give away too much because you know the trailer is awesome to watch just on your own. You should definitely check it out.
Visually, very, very impressive, and it's a one thing you might glean from the trailer is that because of all the modes of transportation, be it dirt bike, be it boat,
Helicopter,
private plane, fighter jet, biplane. Like, there's a lot of modes, ways of getting around, and that's starting to make me just wonder, why do they keep deliberately showing you all the different ways you can get around? You know, there aren't too many scenes of just a main character in the game, just casually walking up to someone or whatever else. No, a lot of it is mode of transportation. Even trains. Trains are depicted in the trailer, and, well, they explode.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, the trains in there explode. It's worth watching the trailer if you haven't already. But there's a good reason why perhaps Rockstar is showing you all the different ways you'll be able to get around in this world, in the world of Los Santos, such as the setting for Grand Theft Auto V.
Yes, as Rockstar revealed in, well, an official, well, the digital issue of December's Game Informer, they claim that the world is bigger than the worlds of Red Dead Redemption, San Andreas, and Grand Theft Auto 4 combined.
Yes, combined.
Yes, all three of those worlds combined, and it's still bigger than all of them.
Clearly, much bigger. apparently, some of the tidbits that were revealed in the game issue of Game Informer, December issue of Game Informer, that is that not only is it bigger than all of those, it's also going to have a wilderness to it. There's going to be a military base, and even an ocean floor that you'll be able to go underwater and explore.
Yes, implying that one of the modes of transportation is submarine.
Or you apparently become Aquaman.
One way or the other. I wouldn't see either one of them being discounted in the realm of Grand Theft Auto. You know. But yeah, the other cool thing, like we said, you can switch between the three main protagonists at quote-unquote nearly any time. And yeah, those three protagonists are Michael, Trevor, and Franklin. Michael being a retired bank robber who gets sucked back into crime, Trevor being a career criminal and drug addict, and Franklin being a 20-something year-old street hustler.
Indeed, and sometimes all three will work together, or some combination of the three will be able to work together, or you can switch back and forth from character to character, depending on what you're doing or which part of the mission you're doing. Naturally, in its sense, reason, each character is going to have their own skill set, their own personality, and their own group of friends that you'll be able to interact with. And when you're controlling one character, the other two, the remaining ones, will be able to go off and do their own things. And for those of you, I guess, canon and continuity enthusiasts and purists, Rockstar has said that Los Santos and the world of Grand Theft Auto V will be the same world as Grand Theft Auto 4 and Liberty City, so you might see some recurring characters from those games, but you're not going to see the big ones. Nico Bellic apparently not going to be making any appearances in number 5, but they do say that this is, quote, the high-definition world of Grand Theft Auto, so also don't expect anyone from the, SD standard def era of Grand Theft Auto titles, like the PS2 era.
Yeah, like no Grand Theft Auto 3 stuff.
No.
But Grand Theft Auto 4 and up is fair game, so maybe we'll see Gay Tony somewhere, etc., etc. But there's one other cool thing about Grand Theft Auto 5. They're going to be incorporating a thing that was kind of cool about Red Dead Redemption. There were those randomized dynamic missions that Red Dead Redemption had. They're bringing them back in Grand Theft Auto 5, so you can expect things like, you know, just random dead bodies, muggers, hitchhikers, etc., etc.
Oh, yes, all that good stuff. And also, too, if you were concerned, if you're into the macroeconomics of the world of Los Santos, Rockstar says there will, in fact, be an economy in the game, but you will not be able to buy properties, though, I guess they're throwing the caveat out there that at least you'll be able to buy loads of other stuff. That is a direct quote from them. And yes, it goes without saying that Grand Theft Auto V, spring 2013 release for your Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. Seemingly the game that has been in development forever, finally coming out. Or at least feels like it, with, I guess, the lulls in between news items and the more recent dearth of information about Grand Theft Auto V. But again, the trailer, worth watching. It's actually a very big-looking game and just impressive-looking game.
Yeah, impressive-looking and very big-feeling. So that's something to definitely look forward to spring of next year.
Indeed. And perhaps one way you'll be playing it is on your Xbox 360 console, but maybe not your standard off-the-shelf store-bought Xbox 360 console, as our next story tells of a kind of, well, crazy and yet awesome promotion and celebration that Microsoft is engaging in. As you may or may not be aware, Xbox Live is 10 years old.
Yeah.
Surprise!
Let that sink in for a second. Xbox Live has been around for 10 years.
Yes, you might not have been aware, but it is, and we'll give you a moment to let age set in again, like it's 10 years old. Oh, God. That's okay. You are not alone in that, my friend. But as revealed by Xbox Live's Major Nelson on Twitter recently, Microsoft is, quote, surprising some of the Xbox Live members that have been with us the longest. And they're surprising them, not with any sort of avatar update or any sort of, I guess, flimsy crap like that. They're giving them a more tangible, worthwhile, almost beefy surprise, as they're sending these people a special limited edition Xbox 360 console, a 10th anniversary console, if you so will. It's the same general model, it's just been reskinned, given a new appearance in 10th anniversary imaging. It's charcoal gray, if you will, can imagine the new style of Xbox 360 consoles with, one end is lime green, the other end cap of it is orange, with some 10th anniversary Xbox Live logos on the sides and front of it.
Yes, and, you know, there's the special logo designed with the tagline, Xbox Live, a decade of entertainment. That includes imagery from the original Xbox, Kinect, the Vision Camera, etc., etc., all sorts of different things within the Xbox history.
Indeed.
So it's, yeah.
Even the disk drive of the special limited edition console says XBL10 instead of the usual Xbox 360, so you know you got something special. A Microsoft spokesperson, when asked by IGN, they, to, I guess, give more information about this, they said, quote, "We are celebrating the 10th anniversary of Xbox Live by conducting special promotions for our members worldwide, and today we begin to surprise a select number of our loyal 10-year Xbox Live members in the U.S. with special edition anniversary consoles. These consoles were created for a special promotion and will not be available at retail locations." But guess what? They're going to go up on eBay.
Yes, very quickly. And they're probably going to go for a fair amount of change. So either one way or the other, sweet promotion on Microsoft's part. And that's how you show customer appreciation.
That it sure is. Now, there's no word if this promotion, if this celebration, this honoring, this thank you to long-serving members, veterans of the Xbox Live community have... will extend beyond American borders to anywhere else in North America or perhaps internationally. Also unknown is the exact number of systems, of special anniversary systems, that Microsoft has had manufactured for this promotion. No exact details, which I guess isn't surprising, given that Microsoft just went up and did this promotion on their own. There was no bells and whistles, no hullabaloo, no great attempt to draw attention to it before it was actually rolled out.
Yeah.
In my readings of the internet, people actually just had these consoles show up at their house. And some of them, I believe, also receive vouchers for a free year of Xbox Live.
Yeah, so I mean, cool on Microsoft for doing this.
Certainly is. It's this is an expensive promotion, mind you.
Yeah. So I don't think they're doing this for like thousands of people or anything, but you know, probably a good couple hundred people are going to get, you know, something.
Something, certainly. I'd be intrigued to know just how many people end up with one of these. It's and also too, what were the qualifications? What was the criteria that needed to be met? Did they have to sign up like day one of Xbox Live circa 2002, or what was the deal?
Yeah, you know, and at a cursory glance, and you know, of eBay, just there's nothing yet.
Yes,
just to be sure. But
as of recording here on Wednesday night, we haven't found anything posted on eBay for these anniversary consoles. But I'm sure some will make their way to the auction site, to the commerce site. As I mean, on the one hand, it's neat and it's actually pretty damn awesome that they're just showing up at people's houses, at people's doors with, hey, you get an anniversary Xbox.
Yeah, you've been with us for 10 years. You've been a loyal subscriber of our service for 10 years. Here's our way of saying thanks.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. On the flip side, you're kind of thanking someone by giving them something they already have.
Yeah,
it's sure it's a different one, but you know, do you thank someone by giving them a microwave when they have a microwave?
Yeah, thanks for buying that microwave off us. Here's a microwave. Thanks, but I bought one off you. Like,
you know, if these people have been, you know, with Xbox Live since the very start, since Xbox One, presumably they've always been connected and never not been on Xbox Live or let their subscription run out or what have you. And presumably, they still have an Xbox 360 right now, and I don't know, isn't there some great irony in that? Couldn't there be a more tangible way to actually reward them, to thank them with something beyond that? The voucher for a year of free Xbox Live, as I understand, these people will receive, that's cool, that's awesome, that's great, but I don't know. You know, I see the neat, but I'm like, eh, already yeah. Something they have. Just, they're redundancy.
Well, in a way, they're kind of opening themselves up too for people selling this on eBay.
True.
So, well, I think that was a risk that they were willing to take. Either way, it's good PR for them.
That it is. It gets people talking. And again, doing it somewhat guerrilla style. No real, I guess, promotion about it beforehand. Simply rolling it out and having these come to people's houses, people's doors. No, that's going to generate some buzz, and there is certainly some value in that as well. So, if you are in America land, let us know if you get one, if you're listening to us, that is. Let us know how it works, what happened? Did they just show up to your door? Did you have to sign anything? Perhaps some sort of non-eBay selling agreement for this thing? Let us know. Email us info@thearcadeshow.com or drop us a line on our website, thearcadeshow.com. Well, folks, we are just about out of time here for this week's edition of The Arcade. But before we skedaddle on out of here, we do have to get to this one last thing. This one last thing being the blast from the past.
Yes, that little thing that, you know, you might have forgotten about. Well, movie, game, whatever that you might have forgot about that's collecting dust on your shelf, or something that's just old that you've never heard of or never seen or what have you. But this week it's the form of a TV show that you should definitely check out if you've never checked it out before. It's a quirky little number called Rocco's Modern Life.
Indeed, from the heyday, if you will, from the golden era for people of a certain generation, consider a golden era of cartoons and anthropomorphized animal-based cartoons. This one was a Nickelodeon cartoon done by Nickelodeon, aired on Nickelodeon in the States. We saw it on YTV here in Canada.
Yes, I want to say that it was one of the original two or three Nicktoons, if I am remembering correctly, it along with like Doug and Rugrats.
I cannot say for certain.
Either way, it's one of the earlier Nickelodeon cartoons, that's for sure.
It certainly was, and it starred Rocco, who was an Australian immigrant to America. He was also a marsupial.
Yes, a wallaby, as it were.
Indeed.
And followed the adventures of him and his cast of characters who were his friends, including Heifer, the cow.
Yes, yes, Heifer the cow, who was the adoptive son of wolves.
Yes, where they have that one funny episode where they show his quote-unquote birthmarks, where it was just tattoos of how he was supposed to be cut up for slaughter, and hilarity ensues. And then, you know, his other friends, including Dilbert Turtle.
Filbert Turtle,
and
A neurotic turtle, if you will.
The Woody Allen-esque neurotic kind of, I think it was supposed to be Woody Allen, really.
In turtle form.
And then, and then there's, you know, his neighbors, the Big Heads.
Indeed.
Ed Big Head, being one of my favorite characters of any television show.
a very cranky neighbor.
Yes, who used to be the most handsome man in O-Town. Yes, they lived in O-Town.
And a very, I guess, unique cartoon. And if you watch it now, it seems very of that era, of that generation. A lot of off-the-wall type humor.
Yeah, it was like really in that heyday of really when experimental stuff, for some reason, got somewhat popular and gained, well, wings and started to kind of fly for a bit there in the 90s, you know. In the whole, well, stable of stuff that, not the same company or anything, but, you know, in that time when things like Ren and Stimpy were also popular.
Yes.
And when you look back at it and you go, how did this ever get popular? It's just so bizarre.
And also, too, the animation style of Rocco's Modern Life, I recall being very exaggerated.
Oh, yes.
Almost with an element of abstract art style to it as well.
Yes.
If you can glean that from what is meant to be a kid's cartoon, well, it's in there. Trust me, you have to watch it and find out. And interesting little factoid, the voice of Heifer, the cow on the show, was done by Tom Kenny, and because he did the voice of Heifer, he also got to work with a man named Steven Hillenburg, who was one of the writers and one of the people involved with Rocco's Modern Life, and they would pair up later again, many years down the road, to do a little show called SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yes, where he starred as, you guessed it, SpongeBob SquarePants.
He sure did, and it's because of that, you know, his time on the show, his voice acting, one of his very first, I guess, big full-time voice acting gigs for Tom Kenny was that of Heifer the Cow, and kind of started it all, and even in interesting little factoid here, in one of the episodes of Rocco's Modern Life, in just some throwaway, I guess, in the background type character, he busts out what becomes the voice of SpongeBob.
Yes, and you can read on your own time his story about the origin of the SpongeBob voice, but it's a little bit offensive, and Nickelodeon doesn't like him talking about it.
No, they certainly don't. If you want to find out about it, he was actually on a podcast. We don't normally, shill for other podcasts, but this one is a good one, and it's Tom Kenny, who has much nerd and cartoon cred with us, so it's okay. He was on a podcast called WTF a few weeks ago. Just find it on WTFpod.com, Tom Kenny. An interesting story he tells towards the end of the thing. It's well worth it to find out how he, the voice of Heifer, became and did the, figured out the voice of SpongeBob. It's Rocko's Modern Life. It's on, gotta be on DVD by this point.
Yes, failing that, you can find most of the episodes on YouTube.
It's well worth it. It's bizarre. It is from that era, very much of that era, but it's worth watching again just to remind yourself, like, oh my god, I remember YTV, I remember seeing this on YTV, and I remember everything else associated with that time. It's a trip back in time, that's why it's this week's Blast from the Past.
Indeed.
But that about wraps us up for this week, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. We're so glad you could join us, and we hope you can tune in next week as well. And as we've said before, you can always email us. The address is info@thearcadeshow.com. And you can always drop us a line on our website, thearcadeshow.com, where you no doubt found this week's show. You'll find next week's show. You will also find last week's show and pretty much every other week show that we've done throughout the course of our over 6.5 year history. So until next week, everybody, good night.
Good night.